Chapter 7. Maria Alexandrovna's genius had conceived a great and daring project. To marry her daughter to a rich man, a prince, and a cripple. To marry her secretly, to take advantage of the senile feebleness of her guest. To marry her daughter to this old man, burglariously, as her enemies would call it, was not only a daring, it was a downright audacious project. Of course, in case of success, it would be a profitable undertaking enough, but in the event of non-success, what an ignominious position for the authors of such a failure. Maria Alexandrovna knew all this, but she did not despair. She had been through deeper mire than this, as she had rightly informed Zina. Undoubtedly, all this looked rather too like a robbery on the high road to be altogether pleasant. But Maria Alexandrovna did not dwell much on this thought. She had one very simple but very pointed notion on the subject, namely this: once married, they can't be unmarried again. It was a simple but very pleasant reflection, and the very thought of it gave Maria Alexandrovna a tingling sensation in all her limbs. She was in a great state of agitation, and sat in her carriage as if on pins and needles. She was anxious to begin the fray. Her grand plan of operations was drawn up. But there were thousands of small details to be settled, and these must depend upon circumstances. She was not agitated by fear of failure. Oh, dear, no. All she minded was delay. She feared the delay and obstructions that might be put in her way by the Mordasov ladies, whose pretty ways she knew so well. She was well aware that probably at this moment the whole town knew all about her present intentions, though she had not revealed them to a living soul. She had found out, by painful experience, that nothing, not the most secret event, could happen in her house in the morning, but it was known at the farthest end of the town by the evening. Of course, no anticipation, no presentiment, deterred or deceived Maria Alexandrovna. She might feel such sensations at times, but she despised them. Now, this is what had happened in the town this morning, and of which our heroine was as yet only partly informed. About midday, that is, just 3 hours after the prince's arrival at Mordasov, extraordinary rumours began to circulate about the town. Whence came they? Who spread them? None could say, but they spread like wildfire. Everyone suddenly began to assure his neighbour that Maria Alexandrovna had engaged her daughter to the prince, that Mozgliakov had noticed to quit, and that all was settled and signed, and the penniless 23-year-old Zina was to be the princess. Whence came this rumour? Could it be that Maria Alexandrovna was so thoroughly known that her friends could anticipate her thoughts and actions under any given circumstances? The fact is, every inhabitant of a provincial town lives under a glass case. There is no possibility of his keeping anything whatever secret from his honourable co-dwellers in the place. They know everything. They know it, too, better than he does himself. Every provincial person should be a psychologist by nature, and that is why I have been surprised, often and often, to observe, when I am among provincials, that there is not a great number of psychologists, as one would expect, but an infinite number of dreadful asses. However, this is a digression. The rumour thus spread, then, was a thunder-like and startling shock to the Mordasov system. Such a marriage with this prince, appeared to all to be a thing so very desirable, so brilliant, that the strange side of the affair had not seemed to strike anyone as yet. One more circumstance must be noticed. Zina was even more detested in the place than her mother. Why, I don't know. Perhaps her beauty was the prime cause. Perhaps, too, it was that Maria Alexandrovna was, as it were, one of themselves, a fruit of their own soil. If she was to go away, she might even be missed. She kept the place alive, more or less. It might be dull without her. But with Zina it was quite a different matter. She lived more in the clouds than in the town of Mordasov. She was no company for these good people. She could not pair with them. Perhaps she bore herself towards them, unconsciously, though, too haughtily. And now this same Zina, this haughty girl, about whom there were certain scandalous stories afloat, this same Zina was to become a millionaire, a princess, and a woman of rank and eminence. In a couple of years she might marry again, some duke, perhaps, or a general, maybe a governor. Their own governor was a widower, and very fond of the ladies. Then she would be the first lady of their province. Why, the very thought of such a thing would be intolerable. In fact, this rumour of Zina's marriage with the prince aroused more irritation in Mordasov than any other piece of gossip within the memory of man. People told each other that it was a sin and a shame, that the prince was crazy, that the old man was being deceived, caught, robbed, anything you like, that the prince must be saved from the bloodthirsty talons he had floundered into, that the thing was simply robbery, immorality. And why were any others worse than Zina? Why should not somebody else marry the prince? Maria Alexandrovna only guessed at all this at present, but that was quite enough. She knew that the whole town would rise up and use all and every means to defeat her ends. Why, they had tried to confiscate the prince already. She would have to retrieve him by force, and if she should succeed in luring or forcing him back now, she could not keep him tied to her apron strings forever. Again, what was to prevent this whole troop of Mordasov gossips from coming en masse to her salon, under such a plausible plea, too, that she would not be able to turn them out? She knew well that, if kicked out of the door, these good people would get in at the window, a thing which had actually happened before now at Mordasov. In a word, there was not an hour, not a moment to be lost. And, meanwhile, things were not even begun. A brilliant idea now struck Maria Alexandrovna. We shall hear what this idea was in its proper place. Meanwhile, I will only state that my heroine dashed through the streets of Mordasov, looking like a threatening storm cloud as she swept along, full of the stern and implacable resolve that the prince should come back if she had to drag him and fight for him, and that all Mordasov might fall in ruins, but she should have her way. Her first move was successful. It could not have been more so. She chanced to meet the prince in the street, and carried him off to dinner with her. If my reader wishes to know how this feat was accomplished with such a circle of enemies about and around her, and how she managed to make such a fool of Mrs. Antipova, then I must be allowed to point out that such a question is an insult to Maria Alexandrovna. As if she were not capable of outwitting any Antipova that ever breathed. She simply arrested the prince at her rival's very door as he alighted there with Mozliakov, in spite of the latter's terror of a scandal, and in spite of everything else. And she popped the old man into the carriage beside her. Of course, the prince made very little resistance, and, as usual, forgot all about the episode in a couple of minutes, and was as happy as possible. At dinner, he was hilarious to a degree. He made jokes and fun and told stories which had no ends, or which he tacked on to ends belonging to other stories, without remarking the fact. He had had 3 glasses of champagne at lunch at Natalie Dmitrievna's. He now took more wine, and his old head whirled with it. Maria Alexandrovna plied him well. The dinner was very good. The mistress of the house kept the company alive with most bewitching airs and manners, at least so it should have been, but all excepting herself and the prince were terribly dull on this occasion. Zina sat silent and grave. Mozgliakov was clearly off his feed. He was very thoughtful. And, as this was unusual, Maria Alexandrovna was considerably anxious about him. The widow looked cross and cunning. She continually made mysterious signs to Mozgliakov on the sly, but the latter took no notice of them. If the mistress herself had not been so amiable and bewitching, the dinner party might have been mistaken for a lunch at a funeral. Meanwhile, Maria Alexandrovna's condition of mind was in reality excited and agitated to a terrible degree. Zina alone terrified her by her tragic look and tearful eyes. And there was another difficulty, for that accursed Mozgliakov would probably sit about and get in the way of business. One could not well set about it with him in the room. So Maria Alexandrovna rose from the table in some agitation. But what was her amazement, her joyful surprise, when Mozgliakov came up to her after dinner of his own accord, and suddenly and most unexpectedly informed her that he must, to his infinite regret, leave the house on important business for a short while.
"Why, where are you going to?" she asked, with great show of regret.
"Well, you see," began Mozgliakov, rather disconcerted and uncomfortable, "I have to... May I come to you for advice?"
"What is it? What is it?"
"Why, you see, my godfather Borodyuev, you know the man, I met him in the street today, and he is dreadfully angry with me, says I am grown so proud that, though I have been in Mordasov 3 times, I have never shown my nose inside his doors. He asked me to come in for a cup of tea at 5. It's 4 now. He has no children, you know, and he is worth 1 million of roubles, more, they say. And if I marry Zina, you see, and he's 70 years old now."
"Why, my good boy, of course. Of course, what are you thinking? You must not neglect that sort of thing. Go at once, of course. I thought you looked preoccupied at dinner. You ought to have gone this morning and shown him that you cared for him and so on. Oh, you boys, you boys!" cried Maria Alexandrovna, with difficulty concealing her joy.
"Thanks, thanks, Maria Alexandrovna. You've made a man of me again. I declare I quite feared telling you, for I know you didn't think much of the connection. He is a common sort of old fellow, I know. So, good-bye. My respects to Zina, and apologies, I must be off. Of course, I shall be back soon."
"Good-bye. Take my blessing with you. Say something polite to the old man for me. I have long changed my opinion of him. I have grown to like the real old Russian style of the man. Au revoir, mon ami. Au revoir."
"Well, it is a mercy that the devil has carried him off out of the way," she reflected, flushing with joy as Paul took his departure out of the room. But Paul had only just reached the hall and was putting on his fur coat, when to him appeared, goodness knows whence, the widow, Nastasya Petrovna. She had been waiting for him. "Where are you going to?" she asked, holding him by the arm. to my godfather Borodyuev's, a rich old fellow. I want him to leave me money. Excuse me, I'm in rather a hurry."
Mozgliakov was in a capital humour.
"Oh, then say good-bye to your betrothed," remarked the widow cuttingly.
"And why good-bye?"
"Why, you think she's yours already, do you? And they are going to marry her to the prince. I heard them say so myself."
"To the prince?
Oh, come now, Nastasya Petrovna. Oh, it's not a case of come now at all. Would you like to see and hear it for yourself? Put down your coat and come along here, this way."
"Excuse me, Nastasya Petrovna, but I don't understand what you are driving at."
"Oh, you'll understand fast enough if you just bend down here and listen. The comedy is probably just beginning."
"What comedy?"
"Hush! Don't talk so loud. The comedy of humbugging you. This morning, when you went away with the prince, Maria Alexandrovna spent a whole hour talking Zina over into marrying the old man. She told her that nothing was easier than to lure the prince into marrying her, and all sorts of other things that were enough to make one sick. Zina agreed. You should have heard the pretty way in which you were spoken of. They think you simply a fool. Zina said plump out that she would never marry you. Now, shh, listen now. Listen."
Why, it would be most godless cunning," Paul stammered, looking sheepishly into Nastasya's eyes.
"Well, just you listen. You'll hear that and more besides." "But how am I to listen?" "Here, bend down here. Do you see that keyhole?"
"Oh, but Nastasya Petrovna, I can't eavesdrop, you know."
"Oh, nonsense, nonsense, put your pride in your pocket. You've come, and you must listen now."
"Well, at all events—"
"Oh, if you can't bear to be an eavesdropper, let it alone and be made a fool of. One goes out of one's way solely out of pity for you, and you must needs make difficulties. What is it to me? I'm not doing this for myself. I shall leave the house before night in any case."
Paul, stealing his heart, bent to the keyhole. His pulses were raging and throbbing. He did not realize what was going on, or what he was doing, or where he was.